The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns Gear and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgarin.com/rain.
Good news, bad news. All those spam and text calls you've been getting lately? Well, that's a result of your information having been sold by third-party data brokerages, or it's been stolen and sold to nefarious people. Ticketmaster recently had a data breach where 560 million users' information was stolen and sold on the dark web. This included their names, physical addresses, email addresses, credit card information, and much more. Best case scenario, this just ends with more annoying phone calls and text messages. Worst case, it's going to end in fraud and you're really going to be in the hurt locker. That's why I've been using a service called Aurora for over a year now. I've talked about it on the podcast before, but not only do they monitor the dark web and the internet for my information in case it is involved in a breach, they go right to work removing your information from these data brokerages. When I signed up, they identified over 60 that had my information and went right to work removing me from these data brokerages. Now, yep, you could do this yourself, but each one of these data brokerages has its own policies and procedures, and I have no idea how you would even start trying to remove yourself from these services, let alone how much time that would take. But Aurora does that, as well as they offer a whole suite of tools to keep you safe, including a VPN, antivirus, password management, parental controls, and identity theft insurance. You get this all in one app, one place, so it's super simple. And you can do this with a 14-day risk-free trial. Super simple. And if you don't like it, you just cancel anytime. It's not complicated. At a minimum, you can take a look and see what information of yours is out there lurking on the web right now. Use the link down below in the description or go to aurora.com/afterburn and you get 14 days risk-free, cancel anytime, super easy, and take the first step in protecting yourself out there on the interwebs. That's the good news, by the way.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Like 45 minutes later, that one hotspot. Is now a larger hotspot. And whatever it hit caught on fire. So like 2 hours later, the entire tractor trailer is this massive inferno. And I was like, I'm weapons effects achieved. Like the you got them.
Welcome to the Bro Chat.
Yeah, we don't figure out who has the intro. But I love it when you do the intro. So, I mean, I get nothing. Yeah, been a while. Okay. I think you have it.
Yeah, it reminds me. Have you guys know Nate Bargatze, the comedian? Have we talked about
him? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's classic. Great. But he's got a podcast. I didn't know. Yeah, called Nateland. If you guys haven't heard it, you got to check it out. It's basically a bro chat, but they're comedians. So they have nothing of any significance. Yeah, it's way funnier. And not a whole lot gets said of any value, but it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's the same as us.
Anyway. Yeah, they pork away their intros all the time. It's great.
I like that.
Yeah, so here we go. I'm not doing it, though. I refuse, so.
No, that's you. You have to, right?
I can't plug Nateland without, maybe they'll give us a little kickback if we reach out to them.
Thanks, Nate.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, so here we are. Rain, you got my intro is going to be introducing Rain, who will give us the official intro. So it's good to see you. It's been a while, a couple of months. So, Rain, tell us what we're doing here.
Yeah, smooth, man. That was really smooth. Well, I'm coming from Singapore. I mean, look at the technology. We're just all over the world. It has been. It's been like 2 months. But kicking off, we've got Kodiak Shack, Afterburn Podcast coming together. We're going to solve the world's problems. We're going to document it. But
this time for real.
I mean, it's been a busy summer. Bender, you were like flying all over the Pacific or getting stuck somewhere, I think. You had a big, big TDY, right? Can you tell me? I want to hear about it. Flash said there are a lot of shenanigans with you and your movement to wherever you were going. I want to hear about it.
Yeah, I got left behind. I got hubcapped. It was pretty bad. I don't know if you've ever been TDY as a single fighter pilot, like just one fighter pilot TDY. It's miserable. Apparently, we're social creatures. So, yeah, there were no bros. It started really strong. So, we left on a Monday, sick ship with some slick. So, Salt Lake City guard guys hooked us up. But instead of going, we were going to go. It makes sense. Like, the fastest way to get to Guam is, like, you know, fly west. So, Hawaii and then to Guam. They're like, nah, let's fly to Alaska and then to Guam. So,
great we ended circle. Up.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, something like that. So Alaska, getting to Alaska was fine. Nothing really broke. It does make the AOS from Alaska to Guam like 11 and a half hours, though. So that's painful. But we got there, and so we had a three-day kind of layover, whatever, waiting for the tankers. So those 3 days were awesome. It was six of us. We were just raging. The first night was pretty epic. We went to Denali, ran a river. Like, it was a good time. And then the day we like showed up for our AOS and the air stairs at Fairbanks International like drove itself, whatever, into the nose of the KC-10. So they're like, oh, you have no more tanker. So we just went back to our hotel. So we got to stay an extra 4 days. So we're a week into the TDY and the jets are stuck in Alaska. And then we finally get the next wave of tankers. And as we're taking the runway, I'm number four and we're cleared for takeoff or whatever. And then I get a cool fail. We call him ICAW, but anyway, I can't blast with that. So we cancel takeoff clearance. I run back to Chalks, hoping that I can just cold iron, which is just restarting the jet and cranking it back up, but it ends up being hard broke. So they're like, we'll see you, Bender. And so all five of them blast with the tankers, and then I'm just stuck in freaking Eielson. And I don't know, there's rules against single ship AOSs, so like the PK of me getting out of there was pretty low. So it was a depressing day.
You always leave like another jet there, like mutual support. And then the priority of it, if you're a singleton, I don't think you can do it. Or maybe you can with a waiver, but.
Yeah, I think you can get a waiver. But the game plan is like, oh, we got some Vipers that were trying to go to Korea. So that they eventually, like, we'll just tack you on to the Vipers going to Korea and then, you know, get yourself to Guam from there. But like, we're not built for that. Like, it's an F-35, like. And we're, fighter pilots. Like, I can fly around my base pretty well and get back. But, like, to fly from Alaska and then find my way somewhere in Japan and then find my way again to Guam, like, that's a heavy lift. So I was, like, no kidding, like, in the, our JTD, so, like, a dash one, like, looking at fuel numbers. And the F-35 engineers are like, these guys are never going to look at this. It was, like, one little chart, and it's not very good information. I'm like, well, I could either be, 5,000 pounds heavy or I could be 5,000 pounds short, like. Who knows what the truth data is? So it was mostly like just launch and see how far you can get, which is what I did. So launched with some Vipers, which turns out I've never flown with the Vipers since flying the F-35. But Vipers are kind of a pit, like the takeoff. Like they were like climbing out, you just see them laboring. Like I was up at 20,000 and they're still like 11,000, like plus, they're like three bag and whatever else they were carrying.
Block 40s,
they were heavy. Yeah, block 40s also. Anyway, it was a good time. It was a Juvets there. It was fun. So anytime you're with other fighter pilots, even if you don't know them, it's a good time. So, and you pop a go pill, it's like a party. Yeah.
That's right.
Plus that, yeah. The tundra. Like other voices. Yeah.
There were a bunch of Strike Eagles that showed up there. You'd have been excited to hang out with them,
Well, that's unproven. We're not sure that's... we have to test that specifically.
Got our Strike Eagle hate in for the...
AOS
for the bingo. Eagles.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I didn't bring the bingo card up. It's probably a bridge too far on my computer. Yeah. But
the
bro chat right. Bingo.
The bro chat bingo.
That's good.
You gotta find that. Like
yeah, I think I can find it.
Did you land in Japan and then have to go from Japan to wherever you were going?
Yeah. So I was doing like gas calculations the whole time, but I was on deck, so it was actually pretty. I was having a good time doing it. But I was like, if I can just sneak another couple thousand pounds, I made it to Okinawa. So that's as far as I got. So we split somewhere over the middle of Japan. They went to Korea and I continued on to Okinawa. And Japanese controllers, I forgot, like they are not athletes as far as like being able to. So I'm like, oh, if I just cut this off and go direct to this point, like I'm going to save so much gas. So I like asked for that. And he's like, say again. I asked for like six times because he couldn't understand me. Finally, he's like, negative. And then he read off the entire route, which had 35 points on it. As filed, whatever. So I'm like, yeah, I'm like, please. It's like not a different, anyway, it was, so I forgot about that. So I just shut up and flew my route or whatever. But yeah, I landed in Kadena, and then the maintenance team from Eielson had been like, hey, we got a maintenance team waiting for you in Kadena. And then the AOS guy's like, hey, I got your PPR. I talked to ops there. They're all going to be ready for you. And I landed, and Tower's like, where do you want to go? And I'm like, I don't know where to go. Like, where are other, fighters around here I could park next to? And I'm like, oh, yeah, you want the Delta ramp. So I'm like, okay, I'll go to the Delta ramp. And I like pull up the Delta ramp, and there's like F-15s and F-22s and F-16s and F-35s and Navy F-35s. There's just like jets everywhere, and they're all pointed in opposite, like, there's no like rhyme or reason to where everybody is parked. They're all mixed together too. So I like stop there and I like look, and there's probably 30 ground crews of different airplanes just like looking at me like, what is this guy doing? I didn't know where to go. So I just like drive down this taxiway, you know, just like staring at everybody, see if anybody like smiles and waves like, you know, you should park with
come
me.
Over
but
here.
Nobody did. Yeah. They're all just like, who's this clown? And every Japanese like little car of, you know, the Japanese whatever maintenance people that are around there, same thing, just like, who is this clown? So I end up just stopping in the middle of this ramp, like I just give up. I'm like, I have no idea where to go. Call back to tower. I'm like, is there an ops frequency or something I can talk to? And credit to the Falcons or an F-35 squadron up at Eielson. So they are deployed there right now. So they gave me their ops freak. I called the top three and he hooked me up. So as soon as I like parked in the spot he gave me, you know, there's like 40 maintainers there, and they're all pissed off that I've just like dropped this jet in the middle of their operations. And then one lieutenant who's awesome, he's got a cooler full of like drinks and like sandwich for me, everything. So they totally hooked me up. So that is an awesome thing about, you know, the fighter pilot culture. Like, they were ready, even though they had no idea I was coming. Like, they knew exactly what to do. They threw all that stuff in, like picked me up, grabbed my gear, got me a hotel room, and took me out to dinner. Like, it was awesome. And then nice. Had all my products ready for the next day, like looked up the ATO stuff because I couldn't do it. Anyway, it was like first-class treatment. It was money. So I owe those guys big. But as far as the Hill guys, nobody, somehow the message did not get through. Like, nobody had any, where they're like, where's the rest of your airplanes? I'm like, it's just me. Like, can you do that? I'm like, no, I guess. Like, I'm not supposed
to.
Yeah,
here I am.
Surprise.
You just one hop?
Yeah. To Guam after that?
Yeah.
No, unfortunately, you can't one hop to Guam. So,
wow.
That it was an ordeal. This could take a long time. Are we going to go through the whole thing? But
all the time. Yeah. So the
plan was to go. So I like hustled. And I get to Kadena. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to turn this the next day.
Want to make a podcast? Let me tell you about Spotify's program for podcasters, and it's called Spotify for Podcasters. I've been using it for over a year now. Couldn't be happier. From the switch, you can record wherever you create podcasts, whether it be your phone, computer, and it's easy to upload it and distribute it to everywhere podcasts are heard. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. Best of all, Spotify for Podcasters is completely free. So launch your podcast today. Get started with Spotify for Podcasters. Go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started.
From Showtime and A24.
What do you love most about Whitney?
Comes a new series unlike any other.
Where do I even start?
Academy Award winner Emma Stone.
I like how you fight for us.
Nathan Fielder.
Money doesn't really matter when it's about doing the right thing.
And Benny Safdie.
You guys are strong, right? At the end of the day, you're going to survive, right?
Next question.
New episodes of The Curse, streaming now on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
So, you know, it's like a 10-hour shorty. I'm like, I'll just get quick sleep, and then I'll turn and go to Palau, which is where my squadron was. And Palau's like the dream. Like, that's like, I'm excited to go to Palau. And then I get a text, of course, like from my commander. She's like, hey, maintenance wants you to go to Guam so they can, like, do some inspections first before you go to Palau. And I lost my crap. I'm like, no, like, if I go to Guam, I know it's just going to get stuck there. And everybody else is going to have a good time at the freaking beach resort in Palau. I'm going to be stuck at Guam by myself. So I argued, you know, I tried to argue that for a couple hours. I ended up losing. And so they made me go to Guam. And so I had to, like, find a tanker. I didn't do it. Somebody at the AOC did. But they found me a tanker that had some extra gas. So the next morning, I was going to blast out of Kadena, catch the tanker, and then he was going to land at Guam. So he's just going to drag me back to Guam. But the Japanese ATC at Kadena wouldn't let me. They wouldn't give me clearance. They wouldn't even, like, respond to me. So not only
dip clearances. How'd you get all your dip clearances? And
stuff? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I didn't. So maybe that was the problem. So I was like, I would like my clearance. And they're like, stand by. And it was an hour. I'm like, I need clearance because the tanker's not going to sit there. He can't sit there forever. I'm like, I'm going to miss this tanker. And then I, who knows what's going to happen. And they're like, they just didn't respond. So I ended up called back to ops. I'm like, hey, I'm just going to take off VFR. Is that allowed in Japan? They're like, no. And I'm like, what can I do? And they're like, okay, you can, we'll fly you on a local stereo. And then you just go due regard once you get above like 10,000 feet. I'm like, sounds good. I don't even know what due regard is, but like, let's go. And so I did. I like 10,000 feet. I'm like, what could, you know, like, what's the worst that could possibly happen? So I just canceled, went due regard and flew towards where my tanker was supposed to be. Thankfully, he was there.
We won the war. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah. I'm like,
for
am
power
I
coming through?
Yeah. Like, if I get violated, is anybody going to get that email? I don't think anybody's going to get the email. Nobody even knows who I am. I don't even have a clearance. So,
yeah, they probably send it to Okinawa. One of your F-35s did this. None of ours did.
Like, no, it was an F-16. It was fine.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's wild. This is just single ship island hopping. Just
single ship, yeah. And then when I got to freaking Guam, I split from the tanker. And then they're like, then as soon as I get within radio contact of Guam approach, they're like, extreme precipitation, you know, like 20 miles wide over the island. I'm like, well, I can't fly into that. And they're like, lightning within 5 miles of Anderson. And we're not allowed to fly within 25 miles of lightning.
No.
Because we're special. And we were made very well. Yeah.
Well,
that's the good. No. That is the fix. Within 25 is like
just stiff
the
arm
best it gets. Yeah. If you don't have the right modifications, I think it's even farther than 25. I had to turn around, call the tanker off his approach, like, and set up a refueling, like, orbit. Anyway, it was like wild. So
you have to have a fuel reserve for like, well, oh yeah, Altravs, secondary diverts because it's like an island, or you got to carry an hour of gas. There's a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, you have to, with AOSs, you have to have an hour of gas at your destination. But that's not enough gas to go to another island. So
maybe like Saipan.
Well, actually, you can get to Saipan and Tinian. Yeah. So I probably could have gone to them, but they all had, well, I'm not sure if they had thunderstorms, but dropping a jet into Tinian's not ideal.
It's not to play.
Yeah, I don't know what happens when you do that, but I don't think I'd have gotten out of there. Maybe it'd have been nicer than Guam, though. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I got the gas. I did. They didn't have an ILS, so I had to shoot a freaking TACAN down to mins, and it was the most mins I've ever. It was like, you know, in the simulator, like we're going like down to mins minus 50, like just see what happens. Like that's what I was like. I pushed the power up, and I saw like a quick little rabbit light, and I'm like, that's a runway. But I had like on a TACAN, they have two runways. Like I don't know if it's the left one or the right one, but like runway environment, that's like
you've
been IRC. I know I can continue down. So I landed, and then the poor KC-135 behind me that had hooked me up goes missed approach, and who knows where he ended up. Poor guy just like, he has to go. Like, sorry, buddy. Yeah, it was a miserable day, and I did get stuck in Guam, so I never made it to freaking Palau. But I saw the pictures, and it looked pretty nice.
I've heard it is nice. That's crazy. Yeah. I mean, so many rules that are like, this is hard and fast. Like, you must have X, Y, and Z. You didn't have any of them. And turns out you made it across the Pacific. That is the most ace thing I've ever heard of.
Yes. Well, I think I followed all the rules for the record.
Yeah, I mean,
I followed all the rules.
Yeah. You had an Altrav. You had dip clearance.
Yeah. The Altrav thing. Well, that's what due regard. I'm pretty sure due regard just means, you know, I'm going to do my thing and I take responsibility for not hitting anybody.
Yeah.
That's pretty effectively. Much what it is.
Yeah.
I think there are rules, but I don't know what they are.
Sounds good. That weather, man. I mean, growing up in Misawa.
Yeah.
What's that?
No, I was saying the due regard just not hit anyone. Like, it's going to be me, fat, dumb, and happy, putting food in the oven back there, going over Guam.
That is true. I think I'd see a, you know, 777 probably from,
maybe
even visually. But who knows? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that reminded me of breaking out or landing at mins, you know, one of those, like, you hit your mins and it's like, I'm deciding, there's the runway, you know, that's one of our buddies at Misawa, it was like, So for everybody who doesn't fly in Misawa, I think everywhere they have like categories of how low you can fly. Like, hey, you can't fly lower than 500 feet or 300 feet above the ground. And then in Misawa, I think it was like, if you shot the PAR, which is effectively a verbal approach where they're like, turn right, turn left, descend, climb, you could fly down to 100 feet and all you needed was a quarter mile visibility. So yeah, flying at 165 knots, like so fast. So there were four guys on this approach. They weren't shooting the PAR. They were shooting an ILS. So it's like, takes you down to 300 feet, 200 some feet. And one, two, and three are all instructor pilots who can fly down all the way to like 200 feet. Four is a like 501 guy. And
no chance.
Yeah. And I'm in the tower. So when you're flying at like an active duty base, you have one guy sitting in the tower and he's the supervisor of flying. And he's like the ops group's representative of the flying program. What's happening? You're the eyes and ears. And so I can barely see the runway and I see like one jet roll out, a second jet roll out, a third jet roll out, and the fourth jet roll out. And I was like, whoo, that's and the phone, I mean, the second I see the fourth aircraft, the phone starts ringing and it's the group commander who also just saw the fourth aircraft. And he's like, who just landed? And I was like, oh, I'm not sure, sir. He's like, I know, you know who just landed. Tell me who number four was. And I was like, I think it was. And he was so mad because he knew that that dude was like, I'm not going to be the one of four guys who diverts. Like, it was far to Yokota. It was like 400 miles or something. Like, it was not a short like hop over to Yokota. But turns out, yeah, it was a ragged bottom. You know, he just like
found a sucker hole. And
there's a pocket every now and then. I mean, a solid number three there, not to kick him out.
See, you can't get away with that front, make sure in he lands, the airliner world, right?
Yeah. Ooh. You can land, you know, without ever seeing the runway. How crazy is that?
Oh, Rain, we got you choppy. Still there?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. I hear you guys.
No. So I did Bender. I just dropped an episode with Drago and my buddy Rowdy, and we could not hear Drago talk. I don't know if Rain's talking now, but we could not hear Drago talk while we were recording. There you are.
The whole
Rain,
thing?
I lost you for a minute.
I can hear you guys, so, you know.
Yeah, he's back.
We have to have some kind of technical glitch, right?
Happening again.
This is going to be difficult to edit. You thankfully, think, it's not my job to do that.
So. Yeah, that's why you do the intros.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, we totally lost him.
He's coming back. But either way, so Drago would start talking, and then halfway through this like really good statement he's making, it'd be like... And so finally Rowdy and I are like, hey man, we can't hear you. Turns out the recording got it perfectly. Just like you could hear him super clear. And so Rowdy and I seem like weirdos because we're like, hey, we can't hear you, man. And Drago's like in the middle of this very useful statement. It's like, well, this is awkward.
But that's awesome. Can you just like selectively edit me out, like my audio feed? Like when you're editing these things, you can just be like, mute Bender.
Yep. Yeah, we can. I can do that. And depending on how aggressive the background noise is, you can like edit out the like you can pick audio to edit out and stuff. There he is. Rain's back.
The good news, what I've learned, because we won't edit this out, is it just keeps recording. So
yes,
I know. You don't even need me.
That happened on one episode. Leader. Yeah, I just disappeared and came back, and worked out great.
Yeah. I can hear you guys talking, so just keep talking if I disappear, and, you know, I'll
but it sounded like maybe you were telling a story.
Yeah.
What were you saying?
Well, what were we're talking about? Oh, the, I was saying, wait, what a solid number three, not to kick number four out to make sure number four landed, or what a solid number three to not kick four out.
So no one talked about where they broke out until Bender. I think you were in that flight.
I was gonna say like I wasn't number three, right? Like doesn't sound like me. I don't know.
that's the same. So if anybody doesn't know, Misawa just has such bad weather. I mean, the weather is I don't know. It's not even surprisingly bad. It is just consistently bad weather. And there was a standard jets break while you're in Alaska, and two people are flying home, and they are like 2 hours out. And the same OG, I'm in the tower again for some reason. The OG calls me and he's like, hey, the AOS, whatever their call sign was, is a couple hours out. They will not shoot the approach because the weather was so bad. I'm sitting in the tower and I cannot see the infield grass between me and the runway, which is on the other side of the infield grass, like less than a quarter mile of this. And he's like, do not let them even start the approach. Because the whole get out of jail free was like, if I've commenced a portion of the approach, I can at least try the approach, even if the weather's below my mints. And then, you know, somehow you just broke out at your mints. And so he's like, don't let him start the approach. Like, don't even entertain it. So they call me on the radio like 30 minutes later. And they're like, dude, I don't want to talk about weather. We're going to be on the approach soon. And I was like, he was like, yeah, legitimately. I was don't like, these radios are recorded, by the way. But like, I was like, the OG has already called and said he will not let you shoot the, like, to not let you shoot the approach. And so they flew from Eielson all the way to Yokota, and he was not a fan. Like, they were, granted, like, they spent weeks trying to get those jets over to Misawa just to divert to Yokota for probably a few more days.
Real
suboptimal.
Who was that?
That was
Haas. Name drop.
Haas. Yeah, okay. Haas and Kazi, I think, were the two that were flying it. And yeah, he was funny. Which rightfully so, but yeah, he was not pumped.
Terrible.
Just that sounds, you know, Bender, terrible. I was realizing while you told that story, so the Air National Guard normally has their own iron, has their own bases, all those kind of things. The reserve a lot of times will like integrate with an active duty base. Your TDY seems very active duty, like that, hopping around, doing all those things. That was very, that does not sound like chill, like reserves lifestyle. The Palau part did.
Yeah.
But you they, never well, actually
most of them were there. Yeah.
Yeah. I did yes, find the, I did find the bingo it. Though.
Well, but
oh, nice.
Bender's like the bro in there. Bender's like the one each reservist,
yeah.
Right?
That's true. Yeah. How many reservists were on that?
No, it was all reservists. So it was supposed to be. Flash would have to tell the drama of the whole thing. But it was supposed to be all reservists, 18. I shouldn't talk numbers probably, but it's fine. It didn't end up happening. Certain amount of jets were supposed to go. All reservists. So it was like all hands on deck. Plus, we were going to bring some active duty to make sure we could have enough pilots. And then it was like, no, let's have it be active duty led with reservists, you know, filling in a certain, like a third of the jets. And then it was turned off. And then it was just take the six jets and only reservists. Anyway, so it ended up six jets, only reservists. But all the flail and all that stuff that, you know, happened from the active duty getting involved, that still lingered. So that was, you know, that's, I think, is why we went to Alaska and why I ended up, because active duty maintenance is who supported us, I think. Anyway, that's how I ended up in Guam, I'm pretty sure. Because a reserve maintainer, I mean, they're going to be in Palau with everybody else. Like, they're not looking to chill in Guam. Anyway, so yeah, it was all reservist pilots. It was actually really, I think they had a great time. The exercise part was rough, making it all kind of happen, but as far as the location and all that, it was pretty good. Not bad. Not Singapore, but pretty close.
Yeah, well, that's... Yeah. I mean, yeah, literally.
It was warm.
Warm. Humid.
Warm.
Plus, Guam had just had their typhoon, so it was like a disaster area. Oh, I mean, it's like looking at Florida after a hurricane. Like, all the trees... Well, none of the palm trees had palms anymore, so it was just like bare trees across the entire island. And then I got there because I was 2 weeks delayed. At least my hotel had like figured out their power and flooding. So, there's consistent power, but there was like power had been out for days and days. So like mold was growing in certain parts of the hotel, like everywhere. I mean, it was a mess generally.
Well, it sounds like maybe it worked out for you then. You know?
Yeah.
And it could have been the Middle East. So yeah,
exactly.
All in all,
which, the worst place yeah. to I thought the Middle East was shutting down.
Stuck.
It's not shutting down. Like, what the heck?
Promises were made.
It just keeps on going. It just keeps on going.
I might go there.
Promises were made.
I don't know. I wonder. I guarantee they're not doing much. Last person I talked to that was out there, they said they're not doing much. They are chilling. But
they're
not
there.
In Palau.
Not chilling. There's that no. can't happen.
They're sweltering.
They are sweltering. They're dying.
Yeah, that's not my that's not my climate. You know, I'm not the 115 guy. I'm not the 95% humidity. I'm the Eielson where the sun doesn't set and it's like 75 and that's pretty chill.
Yeah. You get excited about the book Twilight. You're like, yeah, these are my
it's
people.
It's cold up there.
Yeah. Yeah. The winter's an Eielson, not for me. You know, I'm a be a snowbird in that way.
Yeah, I feel like Elmendorf might be a little more of a happy medium. You know, it still gets cold. Sun doesn't really set in the summertime, right? But it's just a little bit further south.
Which do you hop through there very often with your job?
I go through there a good bit. I mean, Anchorage is, I like Anchorage. Super nice, especially in the summertime. A little methy, but you know, true. What city's not methy
it,
these
it
days?
It is very methy.
Yeah, you watch out when you're walking down the street, but yeah, that's kind of sad. And, you know, just watch out. Well, like going to Honolulu, Waikiki, like that's pretty methy walking on the beach. Like I've heard like states like ship people to Hawaii because it's like warm.
They can survive.
You know, homeless people. I don't know if that's true or not.
Waikiki's a wild ride at night. I mean, that place, the cops are everywhere. They are out and about.
Buckle up.
Yeah.
Well, meth is problematic.
Yeah, they need that tourist money. You know, you can't have, you can't have your tourists getting shanked. So
that was Klamath Falls. That was pretty methy too. You know, I thought it wouldn't get any worse coming from New Mexico. I mean, that's like Breaking Bad was like filmed out there. But yeah, it was like, oh. Sure enough, Firebirds. It's like a grocery store, not the spot. Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
unless
exactly.
You want meth,
yeah, I guess
apparently.
It depends on what you're in the market for.
Klamath is getting F-35s, right?
Are.
That's they're on the list to get F-35s.
Yeah, so I mean,
speaking of which, Fresno might be. Did you hear about the drama at Fort Worth? I don't know what's appropriate for broke. Chats and what's not. But
oh, it's all
appropriate. There might be some reshuffling of where the F-35s are going. Let's just say that.
Well, it turns out the C model is coming apart at the seams. So it could use a replacement sooner rather than later. But yeah, it's the EX was on the docket and then now it may change as the plan has changed multiple times. So it's not like there's been a one plan. But yeah, I could see the F-35. I mean, they could use me in the 35. You know what I mean? Like they're like, let's put the 35 in Fresno specifically for Vader to get some fifth gen love, you know? Cause I could use some stealth because that my RCS in my new airplane is rather large. So, and
flying the tennis court
the other day. Oh man. So the other day, this is a very weird thing. Bender, I don't know if you've experienced this. So I was flying BFM just, getting after it, doing loaded maneuvering. So like stalling out the airplane and then stomping on the rudders and just like seeing what happens. And I'm like winning. And I was like, oh, sick. Here we go. And I'm getting close to the floor. And so like I go to take my foot off the rudder and then unload a little bit to break the stall. So the plane starts to fly again because I'm approaching the simulated ground and I don't break the stall and the plane's not flying anymore. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, we're like 9,000 feet with average terrain, like 4,000 feet. So I'm like at the 5,000 foot and I like unload a little more and the jet's not like flying out of it. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, the plane's not flying. What do we do when the plane's not flying? So, classic max relax rule. And, but yeah, I like unload and finally get flying airspeed and fly away after I kill myself on the simulated floor. And I was like, well, that's a new one. I don't know. Have you seen that in the 35 doing, I don't know, high alpha stuff?
I've sunk through the floor, but no, it won't let you. I mean, you can't high alpha it to a stall, but it just gets back as soon as you let go of that button. F-35 is so gentlemanly. I mean, I knew it was, but it's just put me to sleep in the last, 3 years. Like, when I was doing...
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
AOS with the Viper, they're all fuel check. I forgot all of this, but, they got to spin, four needles and do some math. I can't remember how to do it. But they're four numbers, feeding centerline dry. And one's I got right tank slow to feed. And one's left tank, trap, 2,000 pounds of trap fuel. Meanwhile, the F-35 fuel page doesn't even want you to know what's going on. It's okay, I'll show you some numbers. There's nothing you can do about them. You can't, balance any fuel tanks. There's no options. So the F-35 is just I got it. So I'm just I got 11.7, everybody. and I don't know what's feeding and what's not. It's just going to take care of it for me. Anyway, you got to work so hard in the F-16 for everything you got. You were saying, you got to fuse all the sensors yourself. You got to, calculate your gas, figure out how to balance it all.
Yeah. External gas tanks, where you had more gas internal than they had with three external gas tanks.
Yeah, I did. It was great.
That's crazy. Would you get gas faster than them?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I don't know. I think it can take gas, so to speak, faster. So I think the pump rate can be higher out of the tankers. Plus, one of them, I won't say any names. I doubt they listen to this, but one of them fell off the boom. And we had 13 ARs or 12. So it was a lot of ARs. And he was off the boom at least two times per AR to the point where the flight lead's like, look, dude, we're all going to miss our MRB fuel because you can't get gas. This has got to stop. He's already 34 six packs into this thing. Anyway, it was pretty funny, pretty brutal.
Yeah, that's, you don't want to be that guy. I've been that guy before.
I think we've all been that guy. My call sign is kind of that guy a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You get one of them, right? You get one AOS movement to be that guy, but really half of one AOS kind of movement to be that guy.
Yeah, you figure it out after four or five, I think.
Yeah. At first you have no idea what you're doing, nor does the person who taught you. Yeah. You're just kind of oh, this is my sight picture in the Viper. That's not right.
That's in the C model. I'm still just kind of figuring it out, just out there vibing, it's good enough.
You gotta
no.
Yeah, they talk about that would mess me up.
Your
right?
Center
the guys saying
your center mirror is supposed to check the green apple on the boom. So everybody there's colors where it's red, yellow, green, yellow, red. So you wanna be in the middle where the green is. So you can use your center mirror, which I always forget about, for the green apple, and then your left mirror, you can actually see your AR port. And they're once you get close, you can look in the mirror and see them plug in. And I'm why don't I just look at the tanker? It's quite the big indicator on if I'm getting closer or farther. So you can, depending on the tanker, the right engine is half cut off by the canopy bow, 'cause we have one of those. So I just kind of slice that engine in half and I look at the indicator lights and I'm we're in the ballpark. And turns out, the most difficult part about tanking is staying right of center on the tanker, but not too far right, just a little right. So you effectively want to put your nugget in line with the edge of the fuselage of the airplane. So you can't line up on that big yellow strip that goes all the way down the bottom of the tanker. No, not for me. That's where I want to line up my AR door and I'm going to be right of it. And so that is the thing. I feel, that, what is that flight thing that it's called the hand of God or whatever, where it feels like you're always banking or wanting to bank. I do that the entire time I get gas.
Trying to
I just
re-center.
Yeah, I slowly like want to lean left. And I like, I'm thinking about like putting in clicks of right trim to stop me from cheating left, because it's, that's like the only difficult part. Like jet flies well. It's just right.
That would be trippy, not lining up on center line, right? Because like everything you do in the world, like you want to line up on center line. And then I would think the mirror, like I would see it and it's gonna be like an opposite input. Like, oh, I just need to move a little bit to the right. And then, oh,
yeah, that,
yeah,
now I'm way too far over. Random Bender, you'll appreciate this. I haven't released the episode yet, but Bobbitt, he's an F-35B guy I interviewed. I did give him grief for the canopy bow, or on behalf of the United States Air Force, thank him. I've never dealt with that, you know, but I know that's for you. And now Vader's got to be a problem, but
he did it to me.
He didn't really do it to you, Vader.
Have you noticed, Bender, that the canopy bow is surprisingly small? Like out of the cockpit visibility, it's maybe 5% of the entire canopy area. And 90% of the time it's in the way. You're like, where did that guy go? Oh, he's behind the canopy bow. Yeah. And you're like, how?
There's like 20 to 30 degrees off your nose is like an important place for fighters.
Weird, yeah.
So they're just like, let's just put a piece of metal 20 to 30 degrees. Like, yeah. Like, thank you for that. Yeah, that's right. Where the tanker, like the perfect spot for me on a KC-135. Of course, like the lights are under the canopy bow. It's like, why not?
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do this.
That. Yeah.
When I'm getting gas, I like duck down so I can see under the canopy bow to see the lights.
Yeah.
If I would have kept making only the minimum payments on my credit cards, my debt would have taken me 47 years to pay off.
These are real National Debt Relief customers.
I knew I wasn't going to be able to get out of debt by myself.
Credit card, medical, or personal loan debt? National Debt Relief negotiates with your creditors to reduce what you owe.
National Debt Relief got me out of debt.
You could be debt-free in as little as 24 to 48 months. Visit NationalDebtRelief.com to learn more and get started. NationalDebtRelief.com.
Oh, yeah, piece of crap. Canopy bow.
Hey, thanks. If only they could make a canopy that didn't require to have a seam that brought two pieces of
glass together. If that technology existed.
Only. I say a lot of wrong things. We need Billy back. In my mind, I'm like, I think it was one piece of glass and they just like glued a piece of metal, like just for the fun of it. That's what I think the F-35 is.
Well, they had to do it because of the B model, you know, the B model needed the ability to have the ejection if you need to be able to hit the bird doing 500 knots or whatever. But if they lost the motor at like 75 feet hovering, there wasn't enough time to get the canopy off.
Yeah. So it does have the deck cord,
right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
But I think it opens forward because it couldn't open back because of the F-35B. Oh, I don't know. Yeah. Again, I say a lot of wrong things about the F-35. Yeah, the lift fan's sitting there.
Don't worry. WOMs are open.
WOMs are totally open.
There's a test pilot
in my squadron now that just, I'm just like, I am so stupid. Anytime I'm around him, like, I'm an idiot. He knows everything about this airplane.
That's good. He should. He's a test pilot.
That's true. He tested everything on it.
The other day I was landing and no indication of malfunction. And I touched down. A little extra space between me and the guy landing in front of me, and I step on the brakes and nothing happens. And I was like, and I'm like staring down the burner cans of the dude always stopping in front of me, and I like step on the brakes and nothing still happens. Luckily, I remembered where the anti-skid switch was, and this jet has a pulsar option, which is like 50-50 on off. So it's just like a poor man's anti-skid, like, you can't skid them because it just like stops your impulse every, you know, 50% of the time. So that like slows me down. And I was like, hey, look at that. Fun. So, that was the landing. Worked out.
Jeez.
I've had a couple of those, not where you want to be in life. It's a uncomfortable feeling when you apply brakes and then nothing happens. I argue it's a spot you don't want to be in life. So the whole reduced runway separation, this is something because that AIB just came out with the F-35. See, I always, if it wasn't like a large force exercise or multiple formations coming back to the pattern, call me a wimp, but like I never like landed 3,000 feet behind someone. I was like, man, you know what I mean? Like 4,500, 6,000. Like, it's going to be fine. Like, we're not recovering 60 jets. Now, if we're recovering 60 jets, all right, be a champion. But I'm like, why do I need to buy this extra wrist? Sounds like that might have been a little factor with the that 35 that crashed. A little verbal bobble.
Another report had come out. Yeah.
Yeah. It came out last week. Wake turbulence, and then the jet just doing whatever it decided to do, and then it's the captain now.
Math, out of control.
But it really needed him.
Why did you do all that math? Like, stop it.
Just keep doing what you're doing.
Just overriding math equations. Math. It's like fly level. You know, like, why isn't that the safety feature?
Don't do anything.
I never got trained in the sum of all my inputs equals like straight and level flight. You know, it's like, just like do less. But that's why, you know, sometimes I see stuff like that and I'm like, the computer's got a long way to go before they start taking over stuff. Like the whole ChatGPTs or like Midjourney, which Rain, I assume you've used that. I think you've said you've used that too. And yeah, they're like the AI things. You like ask them to make stuff or do something and you're like, all right, we got a couple years, so. Yeah,
it's not quite there. Yeah. You know,
we're good.
Pretty good. Pretty good. So it's very helpful sometimes, but
our kids are screwed. But we're pretty good. Like, we're nailing it.
Yeah, I like zooming in on AI pictures because the closer you look, the more weird things look. It was I saw a picture. It was like a house. It was like this really cool house with like a whole wall of windows, and then you like zoom in on some like fern or some plant, but the plant's like leaf is going through the window and it's like on both sides of the window in the picture. And you're like, and the more you like pick around, you know, the AI is like, I don't know, I'm just making stuff up here, man. Like, what do you want from me?
Maybe it's just like, that's what you're gonna see in the future,
or
just you wait for it. We got plants that go through
windows. That's the future, or it's lulling. I'll say it's like lulling us to sleep, you know, it's like this comfort, like, yeah, we're not smart enough to like take over the world. And it's just gonna be like, boom, it flips the switch and then we're killing each other. Or like
birthday cards.
Machines are just
birthday cards. Birthday
card.
Greeting cards.
Birthday cards.
There, I get you.
Greeting cards. Yeah.
I thought you had Mother's Day cards.
Rain, I saw you had the girl from the, what was she, the loadmaster?
Voodoo.
From?
Yeah. No, she's a pilot.
Oh, she's a pilot? Yeah, that was
Voodoo.
Yeah. That was awesome.
I had Voodoo, and I just did a release with AP, who he was the air mission commander. That was the most recent episode for Out of Afghanistan. That one, and I'm sure you listened to it. Here's the short story of it that I think you guys will appreciate. It was like them leaving Kabul on the last night, and the Taliban had jumped over the fence. They're all blacked out, you know. And he goes, you know, the Taliban's just standing there. You see one of their MVGs, and they're just waving. You know, it's like they knew what the middle finger was. That's what it would be.
Basically. Jeez, that's crazy.
Like, yeah, surreal. You know, you think about, like, all the amount of time, effort, blood, spent over there.
Missed opportunity. We should have been like, we're all going to, like, chaotically leave this day. And then the Taliban comes, and then we just gun them all down. Like, how did we screw that up?
Yeah.
Bummer. No, that was the Voodoo episode. I haven't listened to APs yet. I'm excited to do it. The Voodoo episodes. Legit, it's good stuff. So everybody should listen to it. They probably already have.
I had a couple more like reach out. I'm trying to get. It's as you guys see, we're having a few internet issues traveling around. Turns out hotel Wi-Fi is not that great, and then I'm on the road for another week. But I've had a couple of different like loadmasters and stuff reach out. I mean, all these people have these wild stories. Like, I can't imagine having been on the ground. You know. The chaos that ensued, just what that was like, and hearing that to me is pretty profound. So hopefully capture a few more of those stories.
Yeah,
that is wild.
Crazy, it's been 2 years.
You think, someone needs to.
Yeah, you fly fighters and you think you're going to be the one like dealing with bad guys and in the thick of it and stuff, and like there are no fighters to be found, just heavies doing what you think seems like a benign task, and then they find themselves in one of the most hardcore settings of all, you know.
And you know, hats off to that community, because I was like, I'm sure you guys have heard it, C-17 community, typically like the answer is to Q3 someone if they do something wrong. So you know, now they're going to have to go get a new check ride, it's a ding on their record, et cetera. And I think we've talked about it. Like that was seeing those C-17s leave with like 800 people on board. Then AP talked about that crew taking off, like taxiing down the runway, and then seeing, you know, basically half the runway is consumed with Apaches and crowds and just being champions, being pilots, making a judgment call and taking off and doing that. Because you feel like the culture often reverts back to like CYA and, this is not done, or it's against the AFIs, but they all made phenomenal calls and made it happen, I think. So the fact that they got rewarded with DFCs, I think was well-earned. Like,
yeah,
being champions, that's what you get paid for.
Yeah.
Use judgment, make good decisions. Make the best decision you can with information.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
And I wonder how much they knew it was going to be like that, you know? Like when you're going into like troops in contact, or you're going into like going to combat, you kind of have an idea of, all right, it's going to be crazy. But, you know, I doubt they expected that it was going to be, that was going to be their experience, you know?
Yeah, AP talks about that. They had no idea. I think the first C-17 just got surrounded, and then the second one stayed buttoned up because the first one, you know, they opened up the door and it was just crowds like flooding onto the plane. And like, what do you like? Yeah, like you said, you don't expect that. You like lower the ramp and it's like some, maybe one or two loadmasters back there, and it's just chaos. Turns out, like we hadn't said we're leaving on this date, you probably wouldn't have had all this chaos that ensued. Whatever. Here it is, but I'd say hats off to all those C-17 crews who made all that happen, because that was a spot I would not want to be in, sure.
Well, yeah, especially...
I want to hear some of the special ops stories, too, because I was trying to get a family out, and so I was like reaching out to everybody that I knew that was over there. I finally got... Mace got me in contact with a guy that had gotten some of her contacts out. Anyway, when I reached him, he was like, dude, the last chuck's gone, like... You would have, you know, he wasn't being a jerk. He was like, like 24 hours ago, I could have done something for you. But his stories were like crazy too. They were like landing there and then like going into town with like their little team. It's like driving into town or like to the address that they were given by somebody like me, who's like, hey, this family lives here. Like, I want them out. I had to go like pick them up, drive them back to the base and throw them on their airplane, like completely uncontrolled, and like fly them out and then go do it again, go do it again, go do it again. Like, it's crazy what they were doing. Awesome though, like you said, it's like, it's just awesome to see like that many athletes just making stuff happen.
Yeah, probably never hear a lot of those stories, or none of them. So wild,
pretty wild. I've never done anything like that. I want stories like that. Dang it, we've had good stories. Not a whole lot of saving life story. Well, maybe some saving life.
Yeah, you know, we did some stuff.
Yeah, we did some stuff.
Not that kind of stuff.
Well, one time, like when we were in Syria, or not Syria. Well, I guess we were in Jordan. Anyway, those Yazidis, is that they? Yeah, the 40,000 people on that mountain.
Yeah,
watching Sinjar. Those. Same thing, like Sinjar. Watching the heavy dudes go in there, like completely blacked out, 100 feet low levels, to go like airdrop them water and food. Like that was pretty cool. We protected them a couple nights.
Which I don't know if we already knew that they were there. Like the Kayak knew, but one day like Crack and I were just flying around and I was like, look at all these people. And then like, we had no clue who they were. I was like, gosh, there's so many cars. It was just like on this hillside or mountain, I guess. And then like weeks later it was like, oh, this is a like whole airdrop thing and all that. And I was like, this is crazy. I mean, I'm not saying I found them all and everybody knows about it because of me, but same.
But maybe, like, it's hard to know.
I mean, you know me, I didn't tell anybody. I just came back and had some midnight meal and called it a day. But
anything that moved at that point, I was like, oh, that is definitely ISIS. Like, I think that's a woman and her kids. I'm like, it could be, but it looks like possibly ISIS.
Good, like it looks like an ISIS woman.
Yeah. It's definitely an
ISIS woman. Oh, man. But yeah, that was a wild time. I mean, because Rain, you just swapped out.
Yeah, Rain. Well, you were like hardcore into the Syria part of that, which we caught just a little bit of that, but you guys like leveled towns in a good way.
You guys started out, but I remember Bender, you were showing me around and we went into the vault and you're like, you just started talking about Kobani and what it was. I think you were showing me this targeting pod footage. It was ISIS, and they were doing these fire raid drills. Do you remember this? Like, it was like a stream of maybe like 60 of them walking down the street, and they would just be practicing these fire, these air raid drills, and they would just scatter. You know, someone would say something, they would scatter, and then they'd come back together and they'd walk down the street.
Yeah, yeah, that was who was that that dropped that bomb?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't say.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't
keep his
that
name.
One.
Oh yeah, I know. I know. I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, he won some special awards, but yeah.
But when they, came back together for like the fourth time, and then that was like timeout for, two GPU 38s. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 38-54. Just a little crowd pleaser.
That is a wild video.
Yeah. Just boom. They should not have been ISIS.
Yeah. We should find that on. Maybe that one's on DVids.
That was the start of it.
Yeah. DVids, yeah, you think it'd be on there?
You think that's on DVids?
I doubt it.
CENTCOM CENTCOM puts all those ones out. I felt like CENTCOM put a bunch of those out, like starting like the middle of our deployment. Like that was a pretty regular thing. They would pump them out there. If you go to the CENTCOM website, there's some media tab that you can, it'd probably take you forever to find it, but they sanitize it.
That one's a classic.
You know?
That one needs to go down in history. You need to preserve that. That might be the single most enemy killed in action with a single like weapons release.
Yeah.
Probably is. Yeah. Well, except for, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Those are pretty big. Did you guys see Oppenheimer? I haven't seen it yet. No?
I've not. I haven't seen it yet.
It's got to be weird, like having created a weapon that destructive and then, you know, it's a lot of destruction.
You've seen Barbie, though, right?
Did you guys go to Nagasaki or Hiroshima when you were in Japan? I did. I went to Hiroshima in May, down for the day, look at it. It's kind of weird. I mean, or eerie is a better way, because they have the building that was essentially ground zero that's still standing, and they have all the rubble. Or not all the rubble, but there's a significant amount of rubble that is around the building. It's just like a little time capsule.
That's pretty wild.
That is.
Yeah, Iwakuni, I think, is pretty close. Yeah. So we've been to Iwakuni, but never to Hiroshima.
Yeah.
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 It was a day trip. I mean, I wouldn't go back unless someone really wanted to go.
I think
but
it's
it
important
was,
to see stuff like
you
that.
Appreciate the, obviously, the,
yeah.
Yeah, the gravity of.
It's like going to concentration camps in Europe. It's heavy, you know, and it's not pleasant by any means, but it's important to recognize what happens.
It's crazy that how, I don't know, like we all went to like combat, you know, and we fly around and there's no good guys around and everything's via video and all that. And then you look at World War II and Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, like all that, where it was like legit ground game and how destructive it was versus like I dropped a 54 on a like abandoned vehicle. Sick, you know, like it's just a very different experience they had.
Yeah. I can't imagine, you know, like World War II, you know, you're going city by, I mean, leveling cities. Just a different fight. I'll say Kobani. I mean, that we went block by block. I mean, over in the US and the allies over the course of a year or so.
Yeah, I'm not sure Kobani is.
I wonder what that looks like these days.
Not sure that's around anymore. Probably not.
There's one concrete plant that was like out to the southeast. I don't know if you guys remember. It was a huge concrete plant.
They're going
to
need it.
And I just saw about like 8 years or 8 months ago, that company, I think it's a French company, got a huge fine by the U.S. Department of Justice because they were paying off ISIS to keep the plant open, which I'm like, why would you keep that plant open? Or like, what is the need there? Other than the rebuilding phase, but it's a massive plant.
So you didn't
bomb
that
name
thing, huh?
I don't want to get sued. No, we didn't touch that. But they would be in and around like towards the, I want to say maybe December or January timeframe. I'm probably messing that up, but you know, it's moved from west to east in the city and then further south, like just migrating over the course of time, which was closer to that. So occasionally there'd be some activity that would occur around there, but you wouldn't do anything, at least that I'm aware of, around the or in the concrete plant. I think that thing's probably still standing. There's a building called like the Under Armour building. It looked like an Under Armour logo. I don't know how many bombs like Vipers put into that, but I mean, I watched the B1 one day put in like 16 GBU 31s into it. Phenomenal construction. Built very sturdy.
That logo is like
not going anywhere.
The that was the comical thing. Like I was there my last sortie on that first deployment some night, and it was just crazy. Like this building was, it was like the concrete plant or something similar. Like it was, think like the biggest hospital building, three-story buildings, like 10-story buildings, three-story buildings, just a huge compound. And it's like two F-16s with like four, like 500-pound bombs each. And they're like, we want to level this building. What do you guys think? And we're like, I don't know. Call somebody else. Like I don't. We weren't going to tell them no, but we were like
we're going to give it our best shot.
We got the bombs for you. Like we just laughed to each other and we're like, oh yeah, we can help you out. We got you. But you're like, you don't. Okay, well, whatever. But yeah, I'm going to drop them because no reason to take them home.
Yeah, don't want to bring them home. We weapon air 39s all the time. Obviously, that's our seed weapon or whatever. It cracks me up. And maybe it'll probably work. I'm sure it'll work. But we're like, okay, we're just going to launch two of these things at this critical node and it'll be gone. But I've seen I've seen GBU-12s shack the turret of a T-70 tank or whatever, go off high order, and then the tank is just like one of our buddies put one on in Iraq or whatever, and the tank is just the tank. It's like still there. I'm like, I'm not sure two GBU-39s are going to do anything to anybody, like to be completely honest. Like,
yeah.
Well, have you, like, I would say my second to last sortie, I was dropping 38s. The DO, he was dropping all 39s. And there's like two separate facilities, so we're separated. So, like, we went there, and they're separated like 4 or 5 miles. So, like, I went off, did my attack, he did his attack. But, like, watching, I dropped, and I came back, and I filmed his. The overpressure from those 39s, and maybe it was just the way that build, I mean, it's probably the way that building was built. I mean, the roofs went off the building. Tires were going everywhere. Probably just packed full of explosives.
Yeah, maybe.
But
yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not the smartest guy around to comment on how weapons work. But, you know, the times I'm like, yes, this is going to be awesome, and it, like, blows up, and I'm like, dang it, that looks like a truck still. Like, why?
Yeah.
Why? I want no pieces left. Like, I've seen the movies. They're supposed to be, like, nothing except for a hubcap just rolling down the street or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that was like our DO. He got we were supposed to drop, and it was like this tractor trailer hauling a Humvee, and we were going to drop on it while it was like going down the highway. And I was like, oh, this is going to be some mayhem. And then they're like, wait. Yeah, they were like, wait a second. We're going to see if they go to some unknown weapons cache. And it's like, yeah, there's always some unknown. Turns out he parks in a neighborhood. So they're like, bombs are off. No more bombs. So it's like the darkest night, and the DO is, he's like, they clear him to strafe. He hits it with one bullet. Literally, you see all the bullets hit the road, and then you just see one part of the tractor trailer brighter than the rest of it, and you're like, nailed it. One bullet. Sure enough, like 45 minutes later, that one hotspot is now a larger hotspot, and whatever it hit caught on fire. So, like, 2 hours later, the entire tractor trailer is this massive inferno. And I was like, I have weapons effects achieved. Like, you got them.
That's perfect.
BDA, one tractor trailer truck destroyed. Manners
and terrain denial on the road with the rest of the bullets.
Gosh.
Old terrain denial. Dropping GBU-54s on a road.
Yes,
you're like, aren't they just going to drive around that? Yeah, probably. But
There's no way to win at dropping on terrain to now. Because if you miss the center point of the road, it's like you're the guy who didn't even hit a road. And you're like, it is circular error percentage of the bomb. Yeah. It's gonna miss a little. But yeah, that was class. I dropped one of those. I was like, I cannot miss. Like, this is more high stakes than any other bomb. Because if I miss a road in the middle of the desert, I'm going to look like a fool.
Yeah, That's like the biggest fear of all.
Can't go back.
You just looking dumb in front of everybody else. Like, I'll get shot. Right. Like, whatever. Shoot your SA-20 at me. That's totally fine. Yeah. Maybe I get shot down. Maybe I don't. But I do not want to miss with this bomb. Like,
yeah.
That is worse than death.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to sound good on the radio, too. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Like, if you lost your motor, lost your wing, we're going to die. I mean, that last radio call better make you sound really cool. Because that's going to be played back. Yeah. Everyone's going to hear you and judge you.
It's true.
Based on that radio
call. It's all you'll be remembered for.
I missed an entire island once in my first year at Guam. You remember that? I don't know. I kind of tried to keep the story kind of quiet, but I had two Mark 84s. I'm like, this is, and everybody's like, oh, you get the 284s. This is going to be sick. And I'm like, this is going to be awesome. But I had the only drops I'd done for the past like year, because at B course, you do just like GB12 stuff. We're like dive glides. So there's this little target island in the middle of the Pacific. And you're only supposed to, anyway, they try to protect most of it, which doesn't make sense, but you can hit a certain spot of it. So we're like pappy peeling to, so we like circle it and then we're like, okay, let's go like green up, and we dive down. And my flight lead drops his, and it's like he shacks or whatever. And then I just go into a dive glide mentality or whatever. So I pull up the dive glide, like toss stuff, hammer down. And these are 84, so they're obviously not going to do what LGBs do. And then I start my pull up or whatever, and I just sling these things. Then I go, boom, boom. I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. And I'm like, something does not feel right right now. But I like get my nose high, like tip over to like watch what happens. And then just off the island, these two massive, you know, like 10,000-foot geysers on the beach, just like, boosh, like turtles and whales and dolphins are flying. Like, I just missed an entire island with the two best bombs this jet can drop. Like,
it's a narrow island.
It's a narrow island. Oh.
Yeah, it's horizontal.
It's a narrow island.
Story that. Well, you couldn't even hit an island with two bombs. I'm like,
yeah. Gosh, well, it turns out that was a trend. We had the next time we went,
actually, we had a lot, yeah.
One of the IPs in the squadrons, but he had GBU-10s. He dropped two GBU-10s, and the one no impact area was these caves. And he, I mean, it was like it was the target. He shacks the caves. And it starts out as like, it's these islands with these like overhangs that these like, I don't know, endangered birds or something live in. And he drops. And then after the explosion, you can just see, instead of these like overhangs, it's just this opening now. And you could see this entire new section of the island. And you're like, oh, that's so bad. Best part was combat camera was in his back seat. Yeah, too good.
Oh, that's amazing.
All right. Well, I gotta get out.
Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns, Gear, and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgarin.com/rain.
Good news, bad news. All those spam and text calls you've been getting lately? Well, that's a result of your information having been sold by third-party data brokerages, or it's been stolen and sold to nefarious people. Ticketmaster recently had a data breach where 560 million users' information was stolen and sold in the dark web. This included their names, physical addresses, email addresses, credit card information, and much more. Best case scenario, this just ends with more annoying phone calls and text messages. Worst case, it's going to end in fraud and you're really going to be in the hurt locker. That's why I've been using a service called Aurora for over a year now. I've talked about it on the podcast before, but not only do they monitor the dark web and the internet for my information in case it is involved in a breach, they go right to work removing your information from these data brokerages. When I signed up, they identified over 60 that had my information and went right to work removing me from these data brokerages. Now, yep, you could do this yourself, but each one of these data brokerages has its own policies and procedures, and I have no idea how you would even start trying to remove yourself from these services, let alone how much time that would take. But Aurora does that, as well as they offer a whole suite of tools to keep you safe, including a VPN, antivirus, password management, parental controls, and identity theft insurance. You get this all in one app, one place, so it's super simple. And you can do this with a 14-day risk-free trial. Super simple. And if you don't like it, you just cancel anytime. It's not complicated. At a minimum, you can take a look and see what information of yours is out there lurking on the web right now. Use the link down below in the description, or go to aurora.com/afterburn and you get 14 days risk-free, cancel anytime, super easy, and take the first step in protecting yourself out there on the interwebs. That's the good news, by the way.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.